Who Want a Boy. Chapter 12. From Detroit, I seesawed around with three other loads before I got back to Kansas. The more miles I put between myself and New York, the better I felt. And by the time I finally rolled into the old hometown, I was positively jubilant. My daughter, Trixie, burst out of the house like a Kansas tornado when I pulled into the drive. "She's lovely. She uses puns. She's engaged," she sang as she whirled around and around in front of me. I grabbed her shoulders to stop her. "Is it wit, honey?" I asked, finding her excitement contagious. "Is it wit? Is it wit?" she sang. "Oh, of course it's wit. There is no other man in the whole world but wit." She slipped from my grip and started twirling dizzily again. Then she stopped suddenly and thrust her little hand into mine. "See my ring? It's a whole carrot. I guess you just know what he thinks of me," she teased. "Baby, if he didn't love you to pieces, he'd be nuts." And I grabbed my oldest child and held her in a bear hug as my heart nearly burst with pride. She was so alive, so vibrant, so everything her mother and grandmother hadn't been. "How's your mother taking it?" I asked a little too quietly. She snickered. "Can you keep a secret?" I nodded and bent my ear down to her. It was an old game. We had been playing it since she was 4 or 5. "She wants us to wait at least another year until Wit gets out of the service." Her tiny whisper tickled my ear. Now it was my turn to get even. I leaned over to her. "Are you going to?" I hissed, and she jumped back and rubbed her ear briskly. Always game, she came back for another round.
"No."
And she jumped back with exaggerated pixiness, twinkling up at me. "When is it going to be?" I held her little face with both hands now, looking deep into her happiness.
"I don't know exactly. We were waiting for you to get home, so he could ask you proper. Then we'll just run away very improperly."
She giggled the way she always had, this child woman standing there so pert and cute before me. I had no qualms about her marriage. She was 22 and very ready. "Have you ever even got a little idea of when it will be?" I asked.
"Wit said we should ask you," she covered up another giggle. "He said you could have your choice. We'll either leave while you're home and comfort Mama, or when you're on the road where you..."
Another titter.
"You won't have to hear her rave about it."
Yep, that Wit was going to make a good level-headed husband. "Well," I laughed at his thoughtfulness, "I'd rather be gone. But I think I'd better be here or your sister and brother will have all hell to pay. Better set it up this week, I guess."
"Oh, Daddy, I love you,"
she enthused and squeezed me in a miniature bear hug. Tad had joined us, and now he gave his sister a playful slap on the fanny. "Can I go along as a witness?" he pleaded.
"You're not old enough, silly, but you can go."
"Are you sure your mother won't give in on this? I'd like to have a nice wedding with all the trimmings for you, Trix." I'd thought about it. Saved it for so long.
"He has to be back in California in 5 days, she pleaded. "We thought he'd drive slow and we'd see some of the parks on the way if you really got in today. I was so glad when you called yesterday, Daddy. I was getting panicky."
How could you fight his sweetheart like that? We walked on into the house just as Martha came through the kitchen door. "Dinner's about ready," she said tonelessly, and went on up the stairs on whatever errand she'd started.
"Hello, Daddy,"
Diana said from the window seat. She was in the middle of a book, and after I smiled and said hello, she returned to her book. She would be much like her mother, I knew. At 20, she was already a senior in college, and she would never grow narrow or dull like her mother, but emotionally, she was a carbon copy of Martha. Cool, detached, unfeeling. Or was it just undemonstrative? There would never be any way to really know with either her or her mother. Tad and Trixie were both bubbling away, full of themselves, and I knew what this house was a tomb to both of them when I was away. "Tad," I took my son by the arm after we'd washed up, "you're 18 now, aren't you?" "Yep," he grinned. "You'll be out of school by June. Are you interested in college?" "Well, I'd thought about it a lot, but..." "Tad, look at me," I insisted. "No hemming and hawing around me. Is it having to live here without Trixie that's bugging you?" He nodded mutely. I nodded back, understanding. "I'll tell you what, son. Your grades have been pretty good. How would you like to go away to college?" His eyes bugged open. "Could I?" he asked in an odd whisper. "Golly, I could work this summer. I hadn't even thought about going away. Boy! And I was about to sign up for the army. Wow!" "Damn that Martha," I cursed to myself. That witch had raised her kids to think they were poor because of this house. This poverty of thought had deed. "Son, you get yourself admitted to the best university that will take you and quit worrying about the money. Papa can pay." He was completely beside himself. But, son, I cautioned, don't tell your mother. You hear? We'll say you won a scholarship or something. He grinned, delighted to have a secret to keep. I had played the little game with Trixie, but I had never done this kind of thing before. Somehow, this made the conspiracy even sweeter, and we walked into the dining room, grinning like a couple of canary-eating cats. The meal, as usual, was eaten in total silence, except for Grace, but Tad and Trixie kept up a series of faces going between them that made the meal palatable. "Very good dinner, Martha," I said, as she brought my coffee. "Thank you," she mumbled and poured her cup without further comment. "I'm glad to see Trixie has caught her a young man." I tried, but this was wrong, and I wished I could have choked back the words. "Caught indeed. She certainly chased him hard enough," she opined acidly. Tad and Trixie rolled back their eyeballs, but I couldn't return the look of disgust as Martha's withering stare was at me. "That will be enough of that, Martha," I stopped her. "You mean that you approve?" "Wholeheartedly, Martha. Completely and without a single reservation. I believe in people falling in love and getting married. I believe God meant them to. You haven't seen their brazen, blatant displays of affection in public, I've heard enough. You show me just one place in that Bible of yours, just one place where either God or Jesus decrees that we should not love our mate or intended, should go through life miserable in our home, show only ice to those nearest us. Show me just one quote telling us these things, and you'll have something concrete to base your complaints on." I rose from the table and threw my napkin on my plate. "It says to honor thy father and thy mother," she had started, but I'd had it. "Well, I certainly did," I told her for the first time in our marriage. "I married a woman exactly as cold and unloving as my father did. I picked you in the image of my mother, and God only knows why. Well, I played by the rule book. I did what he said, and I most certainly don't intend to let my kids make the same mistake." "Bert," she gasped as she jumped from her chair. "What a thing to say!" And she fled from the room. I slumped back into my chair and looked at my kids. Three pairs of eyes were glued to me. "Sorry, kids," I said finally. "I had no right to speak like that in front of you." I stood up again, but this time Diana stopped me. "Daddy," she said very quietly, and I was so surprised that I sat back down again. "Yes, Diana," I answered. "I understand how miserable you are here." She looked down at her plate, working her fingers nervously. "I can't gush like Tad and Trixie, but I'm not blind." I went around the table so fast I nearly knocked it over. She rose to meet me, and I squeezed her to me. "Honey," I said hoarsely, "I think I worry and think about you even more than I do the others. I want your life to be happy so bad. I could just never seem to talk to you." And by now, I was so overcome by emotion that I could talk no more. When I released her, she looked up at me with the shyest, sweetest grin a man ever saw. "Kids," I said expansively, "come into the living room. It's time your old man had a talk with all of you." I felt closer to my kids that night as we walked into the living room than I ever had felt before or will probably ever feel again. "You have a lot of things to thank your mother for," I started, and they nodded in agreement. "It was her that insisted on staying in this house when I wanted to, show off that I was doing well. At any rate, I decided, when she wouldn't move, to give each of you a part of that house I didn't buy. I made a trust out for each of you for $10,000 to help you get a start in life. I meant for this to help you go away to college, but of course they built a college right here, and we couldn't do that. Now I'm going to release this money to each of you."
"Why, that's over $3,000 apiece,"
Trixie said incredulously.
"Why, that would buy..."
"No, baby. It's $10,000 for each of you," I corrected. "Diana, would you like to go away to another college and maybe go for a master's and a doctorate?" She had sat there, almost hypnotized since I'd made the announcement. Now she began working her fingers nervously, and she didn't look up when I addressed her.
I've wanted to go to Scripps in La Jolla, California."
She looked up, and I saw the first tears I'd ever seen in her eyes.
"That's near San Diego, Daddy,"
she told me needlessly.
It's the very top you can go to in marine zoology. They have huge diving bells, and ships go all over the world, and they have only graduate students. Daddy, I'm glad Mama was, tight, at least for me. I never dreamed I could go."
"Hey, isn't there a big college for undergraduates near there? Couldn't we both go, Dad? They have the greatest surfing in San Diego. It's the best!" Slowly, I began feeling like a real beast. My kids were all going to fly the coop at once, along with their father. What kind of a life would Martha make for herself now? She always complained only in her actions. She made all of us feel that we were more bother than pleasure. Now what would she do with a clean house and nobody to bother about her? I felt 100 years old as I pulled myself up off the couch and left my kids to plan excitedly amongst themselves. With Trixie several hundred miles away, Perhaps Ted and Diana would become closer. Perhaps he could help her bring out of her shell of shyness. And in turn, she would spur his grades. Everything, absolutely everything, was wonderful now with my kids. As I started up the stairs, I wondered if there could ever be a solution for Martha. I forced myself up the stairs and trudged down the hall to Martha's room. I rapped lightly at the door, and then I walked on in. She was sitting in a straight-backed chair, knitting furiously. It was so very like her. She cried with her fingers, screamed with her fingers. Those knitting needles were her release. I apologize for my outburst at the dinner table, Martha. I don't expect you to forgive me. I do, however, have to talk to you about the children. She looked up at me, and I saw pure and adulterated hatred in her eyes. A hatred I had never seen, never even imagined existed there. The children will all be leaving before September. Her eyes flashed fire as they jerked up to glare at me. They what? She asked icily. They'll all be gone. Permanently, I imagine, by September. She started to object, but I stopped her. Tad'll be going to California to college. His grades are good enough. He wants to attend a university with a big enough name that his degree will be worth something in later life. I concur with his decision. Diana wants to go to California to Scripps for her master's, so she and Tad'll be less than a mile from each other, and I think that is for the best. Trixie, of course, will be several hundred miles north of them, but with wit, she won't miss the others, I guess. I couldn't help smiling with satisfaction over their decisions. She stared at me coldly. And I suppose you intend to join this trek? I certainly do, I answered heartily. I've lived in a refrigerator long enough. It was mean, cruel. I had not intended to come in here and hurt her more. I'm sorry, Martha. You've been an excellent housekeeper and cook. You have kept our children clean mentally and physically. You have never argued or fought with me. I only wish that you could admit the hatred for me that I read in your eyes. You may never be able to admit it, even to yourself, but it is as obvious as my own misery. The hatred had turned almost to fear as I talked. You can't mean a divorce, she said, almost in an undertone. No, Martha, I answered, suddenly understanding. It was her church, her only happiness. She couldn't bear to face her pastor or friends as a divorced or abandoned woman. I could stay away for the rest of my life, and it wouldn't bother her in the slightest. It would be a relief, actually, but the thought of divorce absolutely appalled her. I could afford to be kind now. I had everything I wanted. My kids were where I could visit them under happier circumstances. A clear conscience. Everything. There is no other woman, Martha. I just feel that there is nothing here, really, to come home to. Kansas is a ridiculous place to truck out of, halfway between one terminal and the other. I feel that we will both be happier if we go our own ways. The two rentals should give you enough income, and the house is paid for. I'll leave you the car. We'll make no legal agreements. I don't think it's even necessary to tell the kids. And we have no friends in common to have to explain to. I'll just be gone on a very long trip. Do you agree? Her eyes had started to shine. Whatever happiness she knew in her drab life would evidently be a lot more joyous once the kids and I were out of the way. I think that's a sensible solution, was all she said, and then she returned her concentration back to her knitting. I got up and opened the door. Bert, she said quietly. Yes, Martha. I turned back, surprised. Goodbye, was all she said.